My name is Jesse Bartley. I'm the Chief Commercial Officer for Scent Beauty, Inc. And what I love about beauty is that it's constantly changing.
From New York City, you're listening to Beauty is Your Business, covering the intersection of innovation and business in the beauty industry.
Welcome to Beauty is Your Business. I'm your host, Jessica Quick, and today I am buzzing about redefining fragrance. And to do that, I'm super excited to be joined by Jesse. Hi, Jesse. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Jessica. Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
Yeah, I would love to know a little bit about you and how you ended up at Scent Beauty.
Yeah, I mean, I think like many things in life, it's a little serendipitous, right place at the right time. So I began my career at L'Oreal and I quickly moved over to Coty. And I worked at Coty for quite a few years. And the CEO of Scent Beauty is Steve Mamouris, who was the CMO of Coty at the time. And, you know, even me being a dozen levels kind of below him, for some reason, he and I always had a really great connection. I think we saw brands in the same way, even to the point when I left Coty, I had an outgoing, you know, meeting with him where he talked to me about my career and where I was going. And then we just stayed in touch and he kept at Coty. I went and worked in media for a while. Eventually, I began doing my own consulting back in the beauty business, where randomly, I think it was in 2018 at this point, we had always kind of been connected via LinkedIn and social and email. He reached out to me. He was doing consulting now because he had left Coty. He had retired. So him and I started working on a couple projects together. And then one day he called me up, probably like 2 or 3 weeks after we made that reconnection. And he said, put everything on hold that I told you to work on. I have this idea. And knowing Steve, he has many big ideas and he's kind of visionary. So I took it a little bit with a grain of salt. But next thing I know, I'm in a room with 5 or 6 other super talented people. And we're pitching brands and ideas. And, you know, 9 or 10 months after that, we had funding and we were off to the races. So it was, again, kind of right place at the wrong time. But I'll think back of it now. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, how did that all come together? And how are we at where we're at now?
It's amazing, right? Like we say this all the time, but it's like, if I even tried to plan this, I would not have been successful.
No, impossible. It's right place, right time. And even as we've kind of gone through the past 5 years of this company and the ups and downs, you know, you have to work with super smart people and good people. And there's good ideas, there's bad ideas. But I think there's also a bit of luck, right? Especially with the way the world is. And I guess for me at that time, it was my kind of lucky moment to have been connected with Steve and been able to run with it. And for my career and really my life, it's just been a really, it's been a great 5 years working for Scent Beauty and, you know, learning the business really much, much more than I had.
And Coty is such a powerhouse when it comes to fragrances. So walk me through what Scent Beauty, really where the need came from for Scent Beauty and ultimately kind of how you see Scent Beauty evolving this fragrance industry.
First of all, Coty was an amazing place to work. For me, you know, I actually feel bad for younger people now that aren't getting that in-office environment like we did because, you know, I was in rooms with people like Steve and Bernd Betz, who happens to be our chairman. I didn't say 2 words, but I learned so much from them, just being around them, kind of understanding how the business worked. But the original vision for Scent Beauty was actually really to be a direct-to-consumer fragrance company only. We kind of threw around the idea of being like Glossier for fragrance. That's what we went to market with in 2019. 2019, we launched in November, so possibly, you know, the worst time to launch a company because we launched that and a few months later, we ran into COVID and it was crazy. But originally, it was focused on direct to consumer. And then COVID comes and we're learning things as we launch the business. And it became very apparent to us that we weren't really going to reach the growth or the heights or the ceiling that we wanted to being just on direct to consumer. It was also super expensive. And just functionally speaking, you know, fragrance is so emotional and people want to smell it and they want to kind of live the brand. And that's when we made the decision, probably right before the end of 2020, where we wanted to pivot and become an omni-channel company, where we launch on .com, but then we go to select retailers and we work really, really closely with those retailers to grow the brands. Again, serendipity. It's like we did that, made that decision, and the brands that we brought on were really perfect for that business model. And that's really where we saw kind of a lot of our growth and, you know, what kind of jump started the company going into 2021.
So fragrance is really unique from a .com perspective, right? Like you said, it's emotional, but fundamentally it's something that you think that you have to smell and understand in order to purchase it. So when you take something like Scent Beauty and you launch on .com first, what were some of the ahas that you found with doing it with fragrance to get that consumer to buy in when they haven't had a chance to even touch or smell it?
I think it's a lot of things. And believe it or not, it's not one size fits all. I mean, and I can tell you perfectly to your point, when we launched, we didn't really have a robust sampling program. We really, you know, we focused on the brands and how do we build out the brands and tell their story. And that's super important to me, especially on the celebrity brands, because, you know, our approach with celebrity brands, it's not like we don't just have like Sabrina Carpenter's logo on a bottle. She's the one that's doing all the development. It's her vision. We're just helping her bring it to life. And we have to really tell that story so the consumer understands they're buying their brand. They're buying Sabrina's brand. They're buying Dolly Parton's brand. But then tactically, we did put together a sampling program where, you know, we were selling samples and then giving people coupon back off on full size. So that becomes part of it. But I think also that's why it was super important where we brought some of the best retailers in the country and in the world into the fold, because we really knew how to do content and social and launch brands and build brands. But to your point, there is kind of a emotional touch and feel connection that people want to have with fragrance. We've taken that approach and we continue to kind of launch on .com and tell the story and pre-sample and do all those things, but then also work really, really closely with retailers on, you know, how do we build that business together? How do we have really great launches? And then how do we continue to build the brand over time?
Right. So it's a real partnership then, because it's, you're creating it, you're starting that consumer thirst for this, but then having that retail outlet where they can go and touch it. Obviously you have your sample program, but if they're out and they're kind of in a discovery phase and they're walking through a retail store, that you have an opportunity to see it and touch it and feel it right then. So it really is something that's meant to work in tandem. So it makes sense, even launching on D2C, that you have a retail component or a physical location component to fragrance. I can completely understand that. I would love to understand a little bit more about how you do work with the celebrity. We've had a lot of incubator companies come on and say, you know, great, we come up with a great concept and we find the right person. Is that what you do? Do you find the person first and then concept from there? How do you work through that?
I'm shaking my head no, because we pretty much do the opposite of that. You know, because you have to remember, I'm ex-Coty, Steve Mamoris being ex-Coty. I mean, Steve and Barron together, our CEO and chairman, you know, they were like the godfathers of launching celebrity fragrance. So they understand it. Yeah, it's OG, but even then to now, how it's changed. I mean, it's really night and day. And there's so many celebrity brands out there, not just in fragrance, but just everywhere, right? At any category. So for us, I would say, you know, if we have 10 different meetings with celebrity partners, we turn down 8 or 9 of them because it has to make sense. We have to believe in not only the celebrity, but more than anything, we need to believe that the celebrity is a partner and that they have a passion. One great example, it could be Sabrina or Dolly. Both, we came to each other, let's say, you know, through mutual people. And we realized just the passion on both sides for launching the brand. And I think we had a shared vision. And then once we realized that from a business perspective, we're on the same page of here's kind of what we want to do, then we become more of a facilitator. We take the celebrity through the process. We help them not make the mistakes they don't know, as, you know, not being experts. But ultimately, it's Dolly and Sabrina saying, here's the fragrances I love. Here's the concept I love. Here's what this means to me. And then we bring that through life, through the product, through the scent, through the marketing. But it's a word you said before, it's partnership. That really is the approach that we take. And for me, I think that's how you go from a celebrity brand to a real brand that has not only potential where you can launch it and be successful, but really, you know, longevity. These celebrity brands that last for a really, really long time.
So when you look out at kind of the future, are you, obviously you've got people coming to you, you guys are thinking about where there might be white space and what might fill that white space. Is that all done in-house? Do you have an internal team that you work with to find and decide where you want to head next? Are you really out there, you know, finding these next right people, as in celebrities or fashion designers, and then seeing where they see the white space? Are you driving that or are they?
It's a combination of both, right? Because we're all living it. We're in the weeds with our retail partners. We're in the weeds with brands. We see what's happening out there. And again, I think because of our experience and kind of network and beauty, you know this world. It's like everybody knows everybody. It's like a 6 degrees of separation. So we do constantly kind of have opportunities coming to us. We are always out there looking for potential new celebrities, new fashion brands, new lifestyle brands. I mean, another thing we love to do is find a brand that exists that has an incredible awareness and following, but that we think is just kind of underserved. You know, that's what we did with the Stetson brand. So it's probably a little both. And honestly, I think sometimes the best opportunities come when you're not really looking for them, which is odd because we're always looking for them. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's like you're at a meeting for something else and it kind of comes to you. But it's definitely both. And we're super ambitious. So you could expect that we're going to be launching new brands. I should say our own brands, you know, more innovation for our own brands and growing those, but always looking to bring on new brands and continue to grow as a company and take over more market space and bring innovation along with those new brands as well.
On that front, obviously in beauty as a total, it's really obvious trends and so forth and clean and space, all that we've been seeing. When it comes to fragrance, what are you seeing as the trend? But then where do you see the fragrance industry headed in the next 5 years?
We're definitely seeing people still want to buy luxury fragrance, right? Like fragrance to people is, I think, something they buy as a luxury to treat themselves. I think celebrities coming back in a big way. I think people have emotional connections to certain celebrities, and it's not celebrity market in the sense where any celebrity can sell. I think you really need someone special that cares and that's meaningful. For sure, clean fragrance is a big thing. I think in every category, I mean, you go to the grocery store and everybody wants to know, what are they putting in their body? Where is it coming from? I think beauty is an extension of that. Fragrance goes on your body. Skincare goes on your body. So transparency for ingredients and where it comes from. We're actually working on our own clean line now that we'll be launching later this year that we've done extensive research on. And then I think also product format. People always want to try new innovative ways to wear beauty. So we're working on a couple different product formats for next year. We also are big in portability. For us, it's like just like anything else where the actual scents and trends change, the trends of how and when you want to wear fragrance change. It's not like 20 years ago where you wake up and put a dab on your neck and, you know, you're off to work for the day and work your normal 9 to 5. It's like, you know, I'm going to the gym, I'm going to cocktails after, I'm going to go to the office and stop home. Everybody has a travel spray on them or they have body sprays. So I think also the format is something unique where it's, you know, more of a traditional fragrance itself, but how and when are you using it? And what is getting that fragrance to you and on you?
Such an interesting perspective. The way you said it, it actually makes me think of the way we would think about beauty a few years ago when it would be like, it's not so much about who is wearing it and that demographic, but when are they using it? When and what times of days? Why are they doing it? And so you create a story around who that end consumer is and all the different variations of their day. Because when it comes to cosmetics, beauty, skincare, hair care, we have these different moments throughout the day that we're utilizing something more. And fragrance in that capacity, I think that's very innovative to think about how we think about fragrance.
Because it's kind of last, right? It's last to the race in a sense, right? Like cosmetics and skincare has always, the use case has always been kept in mind when you're creating the actual products. I think fragrance is a little bit behind there. You know, and we're also seeing a lot of challenges with fragrance, especially in drug and mass where they're going behind glass and it's just not the same experience. So doing smaller sizes, doing travel sizes, we're able to put those in different places. It brings in a new customer because maybe they didn't go there for fragrance, but now all of a sudden I have a travel spray that's sitting in the front and it's Stetson or it's Sabrina or it's Dolly. And you have someone that didn't even know that Dolly had a fragrance, but she's a huge Dolly fan. So it also gives us different point of sales. And it's something to your point, it's just a different perspective. And I think we have to kind of keep up with that use case and how people are using it.
Yeah. We were just having this conversation yesterday with one of my clients about the whole situation with retail and the theft and the level that's happening at retail right now, where shelves are very empty, products are walking away, it's very hard to stay on shelf. And just even you saying that, thinking about it in a different way of just right now, it's easy to say, put it behind locked doors or have somebody manning that area that walks through and handpicks for people to try. But the idea of having it smaller or having it in a different location where you don't get stuck behind the glass, because we all know it's, you know, you're done then. And especially with fragrance, because you do want to smell it and you do want to experience it. So that idea of thinking about it differently, the format, the size that can combat some of these challenges in the industry, super interesting. What other kind of, from the conception of Scent Beauty to now, what have been one or two challenges that have come your way and what have you done to really jump over them?
you know, retail overall is not easy. You know, everyone thinks you go to a retailer and you're kind of set. But in the end, it's how do you continue to build that brand? You know, how do you work with your retail partners? How do you create the right marketing? And it's not one size fits all. And it's really an always on process. I think what we've done well at Scent Beauty is, to your point, when we see a challenge, it's not like, oh, well, it's behind glass now. We're going to lose sales. We're done. It's really about being pragmatic and coming up with solutions like that. And one thing I'm super proud of is just the relationships that we've created with our retail partners, where I think they're comfortable coming to us saying, listen, you know, sales are down and here's why. How do we solve the problem? And we did that together. That's really how our portables that we're creating that I was just talking about came to life. It was not only these innovative and they're really cool to use and unlike traditional fragrance, it was, hey, how do we get new people to try the fragrance? So it's lower barrier of entry. How do we get it out behind glass? You know, they're just all problems that we kind of had to figure out how to solve. I think the other big one is supply chain. I mean, that has been crazy since COVID. We're taking our approach, which is like mega ambitious. It is like a kind of have to go all in or go all out and be lean. So it's not easy, but again, it's really just communication amongst the team. It's taking a little bit of risk, working closely with your partners, but that's getting a little better, I would say, but it was a crazy time during COVID because it was like everyone saw retail going crazy and doors closing and supply chain shutting down. So I think going through that year and a half, 2 year period, it's almost like you look back and you're like, well, I made it through that. I can make it through anything. And we're super proud of that, you know? So
yeah. And it gave us different perspective and a different, again, problems that have always been an issue. You know, supply chain, we've always had problems with. Innovation is hard and challenging. I mean, if it wasn't, everyone would do it. So the fact that finding just different ways to solve it, I'd love to hear your perspective. We've had a couple viewpoints on this show, even when it came to supply chain. I've had some founders and owners say, look, we had to go local. We stopped all overseas. We rarely went local. I've had some that said, look, we stayed overseas, but we shrunk our POs. So we have smaller POs in order to manage the turn faster. Where's your perspective on some of the hiccups in the supply chain and how to overcome them?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I had one answer for you because then I'd be someone that was very, a lot of people would want to talk to me. But so we have really incredible manufacturing partners. I think we've worked with them on a balance of, okay, here's what I'm hearing in terms of our forecast. Here's what we're seeing in terms of turns and sales. Very data specific. So we're much more in the data than we ever were. Tons of pre-planning. And what is really the issue, right? If you break it down, when you look at a fragrance, is it the formula? Is it the pump? Is it the glass? And you have to go that granular to say, okay, this is going to take this long. This is going to take this long. So it's like, all right, order extra pumps, keep them on hand. It's kind of nuts when you think back to it because we had to go so in the weeds on all the timelines and managing those. And I think it's a combination of, again, just really great communication, great partners who are willing to kind of work with us. And then also that data. We've never been so in tune to the POS and really our store turns down to where we know every SKU, you know, what is it selling per week in every retailer, which at the time when you're going through it, you're like, oh my gosh, how am I ever going to sustain this? But, you know, it helps you understand your own business. And it's kind of something that you should always know anyway. So I think it was like a really incredible education. And I've seen timelines get better. And I think it's just, if you think of what people do when difficult times come, you know, they figure out solutions. And I think a lot of people in key positions have figured out those solutions and know how we overcome those things. And we've gotten back at least closer to what the timelines were prior to COVID, where they're manageable, which, you know, lets me sleep at least a little bit better at night, which is good.
Yeah. And it is true. I mean, you started the answer off by saying, like, it's not a one answer because it's dynamic and companies have their own capabilities. So another element is what your company is strong at and what they're not. And therefore, you lean into that solution that's going to best fit. So makes total sense. To your point about getting granular, I mean, we were down with one of my clients. I was in the weeds even about the raw ingredients and how many different suppliers we have for the one raw ingredient. And
I remember. You know, and one upside that Scent Beauty has is because we are a lean company, we worked for the big guys and we know the process where it's, you know, 14, 16, 18 months for newness. We work quicker because we're smaller and we have less brands. So that certainly helped because it's kind of like, okay, I get word on Monday that something's changing. Monday afternoon, the plan is in place, you're ready to figure it out. So it's never going to be perfect, but the way we react to problems and kind of find a solve for them, even if it's momentary, you know, it's something we have become good at because we had to, I'll say.
I think that's a perfect way to say that. And I do think a lot of people would say the same. You've got the discipline that comes with those big companies, and that's really important. And the organization, the structure, that's important. But then when you are more lean, the agility that you have, the ability to pivot and the ability to make a decision quickly with a few key people in the room and move, understand the risk. I think it would be great to find the both. But again, I could do that. I would have a lot of people talking to me. But that is, it's one of the benefits of being lean. And I loved what you said about the data and really understanding it. One thing that I run into a lot with data, especially a large amount, is it's all at your fingertips, but then what? Do you have specific people on your team, or you've specifically hired to have someone that can really dive into that data? Have you, at a larger level, and most of your team members as well, really do understand data? Because everything is out there. It's now what you do with it. How do you make those recommendations? How do you make those decisions? Then how do you do that with a lean team?
It's a difficult question because, you know, when I hear data, my mind goes to so many different places, right? So, you know, one addition that we made to our team this year is we're focusing a lot on shopper marketing, where it's really, you know, let's look at marketing that's going to drive turns in some of our biggest retail partners. And obviously that's super data focused because it's like you press a button and you want to see what happens with the sell through. So that's one kind of piece of the business that we're focusing on investing in this year. But then there's just the POS, right? Where it's like, every week I'm kind of looking at numbers and there's the data part of it. But if you're really not in tune with the business, if you don't, you're not talking to the marketing team, you're not understanding what's happening in the brand, you're not understanding what's happening with the world, you're kind of misinformed. And you can have all the numbers that you want. If you don't understand all those other variables, the numbers are never going to make sense to you. So I think it's a combination of, to your point, you have to have the data at your fingertips, but it's also putting them into the correct context. I love pulling data from the past. I think that's our best way to really look at it, of what were we doing last year? You know, did certain things work? You know, again, for a lean team, and you know, while we have tons of investments going around, we also want to make sure that they're working, right? So on a commercial level, when we're investing in marketing, you know, we're looking at that POS. If our goal is bottom funnel to get that conversion and it's not converting, we have to switch some things up on the marketing team. So I am super connected to all of our brand managers, and you know, we're really constantly talking about what's going on the brand and the marketing side, and then what we're seeing on the commercial side.
And I think that's absolutely the way it has to be, right? That connection between operation, marketing, sales, and really understanding the full business. So with that said, then you've got the actual retail and point of sale. How, from a marketing into the digital space, so how are you layering in the information that you're getting from social, from digital, from your own website? How do you layer that into your retail data to make those better decisions?
Honestly, I think that's probably the most difficult part, right? Because it's like you have the digital and social space, and then it's like, how do you get that to translate in store at retail? And I don't think it's something that you ever fully figure out, because the digital space is just changing like so much. And I think every brand audience is different, and you have to kind of cater to that audience. So our approach really first is, who is our customer? And again, that's a loaded question, because you have a brand like Stetson where we look at it as a generational customer. You know, when we took the brand over, the customer was easily 40 plus. But what was unique was that there was a huge awareness amongst the younger customer, simply because the older customer has had this brand in their house for like 3 decades, and the younger customer is just, you know, subconsciously seeing it. But the problem is the younger customer doesn't have any product that relates to them. So the first thing we did when we took that brand over 2 years ago was, let's create some younger modern scents and some younger modern, you know, forms like body sprays and travel sprays. And, you know, we've seen our 24 to 35 year old shopper go up like 80%. And from a marketing perspective, then it's like, okay, you have the older brand that's Stetson Original, you have Stetson Spirit and Men's Grooming, which is our kind of younger brand, younger demo, Stetson Legend, which is in the middle. So we take a different approach for each brand in terms of marketing. We know that the older person is on Facebook, and you know, that's where they're going to convert, and Google, where the younger person, we're testing TikTok ads and we're streaming on Yellowstone because Luke Grimes is now the face of the brand. So it's really, who is the customer? Who is the demo? Where are they living? Where are they consuming media? And then the flip side of that is, you know, we have big business on Amazon. We have a great partnership with Walmart. You know, they have their own .coms that are kind of like their own animals. So we have separate teams that look over just those. And you know, then in the end, you have to bring it all together. So like, what are you doing in your outside world? What are you doing with each retail partner? And to your point, it's all about how do we stay close in communication? And then how are we looking at the success of what we're doing and, you know, what needs to be changed? A plan that starts in January, I could tell you, looks very different by the time you get to August, because we see certain things work, certain things don't. You know, that's why I said at the beginning in my intro that I hate beauty, but also love it because it's always changing, right? And, you know, that's the risk part too. Sometimes you have to have the visionary and, you know, the visionary kind of aspect of it and not be scared to take a risk and do something different and be disruptive. And we try to do that as well sometimes too.
And I love that you said it's a risk, because even being disruptive, right? We all, it's our favorite word to throw out, like where an agency will come in and they'll tell you, oh, well, we're going to help you get disruptive. We're going to do this.
Disruptor, turnkey, incubator. They're like all the buzzwords that we, yes. Yeah. I say them in meetings and I'm like, oh, I'm cringing saying this, but.
I mean, there's a time and place for sure, but you're not wrong. And I think that's what's fascinating to me too about beauty is the fact that we can start in January and we can lay out the plans and we can build our budgets and see the consumer data and the trends and have an idea. And then come August, it has grossly changed and you can't predict it. And I joke that we make yearly plans to manage them quarterly and to drive them monthly, because you just every 30 days, it's different. And there's things that are unpredictable, both in good ways, like something does take off, or you have, for some reason, that episode of Yellowstone, it just really hit home and you got a lot of sales and you can't necessarily explain it and you can't replicate it, but how do you build on it?
Yeah. And I think for us too, it's also the good, the bad, and the ugly. There's so much communication between the different brands where, you know, we'll have an opportunity or something that's working really great on Stetson and maybe it's not a fit for Sabrina. They're such different brands, right? But at least it's worth an information share out of, hey, here's how we did this and there was a really great payout for it. I'm not saying that you should do that on that brand, but maybe think about those touch points that we hit along the way. It could be something that's useful. So it kind of goes back to just experiencing something. You always have to do something once to figure out if it's going to work or not, right? So you have to do it to do it. And I think the key is don't make the same mistake twice, but take the learning that you have from that of what worked and make it better and really lay it out to your other brands.
Yeah. And I think Scent Beauty is such a really interesting example because you are a bit of a microcosm. You have these different brands within it that are so definitive in their own way. And so as an overall corporation, how you take the learnings and the concept that worked or didn't and expand that or it doesn't, but that best practice sharing and all the things that can happen. It's a really interesting, different way of having it where most have one brand or maybe two, but you're not as diverse as Scent Beauty is.
We do business in the value channel with Dollar General and Family Dollar all the way up to Bloomingdale's and Nordstrom. And I'll tell you that obviously not every retailer is the same, but there certainly is learnings just in the overall retail space. Now we're expanding in a huge way globally. So I'm constantly talking to those partners as well, kind of hearing what's happening in different markets. My motto is really that I always take a meeting. If someone wants to meet with me, I'm going to meet with them because there's always something you can learn from really everyone in our industry.
I couldn't agree more, Justine. It's such a great way to kind of end this, because if somebody does want to reach out and to connect with you, what would be the best way to get a hold of you?
The best way is probably through my email, which is jbartley@scentbeautyinc.com, or on my LinkedIn. And then obviously you can connect through our social pages, all at Scent Beauty, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
Thank you so much for the time. And thank you so much for diving into some of these more operation-minded questions we haven't had a chance to delve into in a while. And it's so refreshing to have you and your point of view on the show. And I forget how much I actually really love this side of the business as well. So thank you for the time and the expertise.
Yeah, thank you, Jessica. It was my pleasure. I had a blast.
Well, thank you so much for listening. And if you want to continue to buzz with me, head on over to buzzbeauty.com.
This has been Beauty is Your Business, produced by Mouth Media Network. Keep in touch on Instagram and Facebook at Mouth Media Network. And find prior episodes at beautyisyourbusiness.com and wherever the best podcasts are found. Your brand message can be on this show. Email us to find out more at podcast@mouthmedianetwork.com. Thank you for listening.